instructional strategies? How do you take the tools and resources and media that you have available to you in Discovery Education Streaming through the IDEAL portal, how do you take that now and build that instructional experiences? So whenever I do a session like this, first of all, this is a session where I'm going to ask you to actually participate. Luckily, you don't have to actually get up and move around, but I'm going to ask for some participation. So when I ask a question, I promise you it's not a rhetorical question. So please feel free to raise your hand and shout out. And to help us out a little bit with this, I'm bringing in one of our resident experts here in the state of Arizona, Rosie, can I give your Den's credentials first? And then you can give your own special credentials. Rosie is actually the chair of the Discovery Educator Network Leadership Council here in Arizona. So she coordinates a group of, how many do we have?
Nine,
including you.
Yeah.
Yes. So Rosie coordinates a group of 9 educators across the state who work to bring in-person events and exciting opportunities to the educators here in Arizona. And so one of the places that you can learn about some of these great events, so I want to give you 2 places. The first is the Den National Blog, which you can actually shorten the URL. Just have denblogs, denblogs.com. And you can actually see that on Den Blog, we actually put together a post format where we have some great takeaway resources that we have put together. We have the room schedule. But the other place that you can go is the Arizona State Blog, which is denblogs.com/Arizona. And there you see our Leadership Council also talking about some of the great activities and things that are coming up. Now, the reason I mention this is because when you have an opportunity to attend a conference like MEC and you are walking around with all of these great ideas in your head, you know that is by the time you get back to your car and you drive back home, half those things just fall out of your head, right? There's just too many ideas. But if you have an opportunity to tap into a network where you can continue the conversation, you can talk with other educators, you can see what they're doing, what's working in their classrooms, get inspiration from your best resource, other educators, it becomes a much more valuable experience. So the Arizona blog will give you lots of great ideas. We'll also let you know when we have some events coming up in the state. So I'm sorry, Rosie, that was like a really big introduction for your professional credentials. You want to tell them what you do for Cartwright as well?
Sure. I am the teacher on special assignment for technology training in the Cartwright School District. This is my 4th year in the position, and I basically do a lot of staff development, or organize and prepare staff development for our teachers in the district. And then the Den Leadership Council keeps me busy and other things like that. So
that's what I do.
So let me ask, how many of you in the last, let's say, 3 weeks, how many of you in the last 3 weeks have gone to the IDEAL portal, signed in, and accessed Discovery Education? Excellent. Now let me just ask, what are you doing when you get there? That's not a rhetorical question. What are you doing when you go to Discovery Education? Yes?
I downloaded a video on St. Patrick's Day using my music class.
Excellent. So for special holidays and things like that, fantastic. I'm actually going to show you another resource that I often used when I was in the classroom for special commemorative days and things along those lines. What else are you doing when you go to Discovery Education? Through, of course, the IDEAL portal. What else are you doing?
Yes. Usually walking teachers through, helping them. I log in remotely and walk them through when they get lost or confused.
And so it sounds like you must work in professional development. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There are actually some great professional development resources I'll share a little bit later on as well. Yes?
I also made a word search puzzle.
Puzzle Maker?
Yep.
Fantastic. In fact, the next session that's going to run in this room, Steve Dembo, our keynote speaker, is going to be doing a session on all of those free tools and resources like Puzzle Maker that you have available through DiscoveryEducation.com. Things you probably didn't even realize existed and you already have access to. So, let me just ask another question. When you start your day, whether it's your first class of the day or if you're an elementary teacher, you're starting your full day with your students, what do you do to start your day? What happens in the beginning of the day? This sets the tone for the rest of the day or sets a tone for the rest of the class?
Calendar.
You use calendar from Discovery Education?
No, calendar time.
Oh, calendar time. Oh, wait until you see have available Discovery Education calendar to spice up that calendar time. What else do you do at the start of the day?
Journal
writes. Fantastic. I'm showing you something for that as well. What else?
Current events.
I'm a former social studies teacher. That's how I started my class periods as well. I did something with current events. I also always found with current events that my students need a little bit of background to understand the current event. They need a little bit of scaffolding to get the relevance. So take a look at something there as well.
We do vocabulary word of the day.
Vocabulary word of the day. Excellent. Well, Rosie, I wonder what people do in other parts of the world. If I wanted to know, you know, to share with my students what, say, kids in China did at the start of school day, where would I go?
Well, I might go to the teacher center. Especially with our classrooms, a lot of us work in high population of low socioeconomic deprived areas, and so I like to take them to other countries. And maybe I'd like to see, like Jen said, what's going on in China. So I'll go to the Atlas in the teacher center and find out how they start their day.
As the sun rises over the People's Republic of China, First Life reveals a nation in the throes of tumultuous change. China is hurtling toward a future dream of economic prosperity and opportunity for each of its 1.3 billion citizens. But as the Chinese embrace this great new world of progress, they also see balance in traditions and beliefs hundreds or thousands of years old. Getting fit is a fairly modern idea in the West, but in China, they've been doing it for centuries. Every morning, an estimated 200 million Chinese in every major city, town, or small village can be found in public parks and on street corners practicing Tai Chi. A soft or internal martial art, Tai Chi is thought to have developed from a similar root to the hard or external martial art of Kung Fu. Its stances and moves place an emphasis on breathing exercises and posture. It's thought to enhance the flow of the vital life force the Chinese call Qi, improve blood circulation, and boost the immune system. But it's also a form of exercise that combines the quest for physical health with the search for greater mental and spiritual balance. Despite there being many different styles of Tai Chi, they all adhere to the concept of yin and yang, the two great polarities of Eastern philosophy and science. Yin is cool, negative, and winter, while yang is warm, positive, and summer. The yin and yang are two halves of one great whole, and this is called the Tai Chi. This idea of balance between light and dark, strength and weakness, ancient and modern, has underpinned Chinese society for more than 1,000 years. And as China finds its feet on the world stage, this search for a perfect balance will become ever more important.
So let me ask, how different would your middle school kids, high school kids be if they started playing like that? I taught middle school for like 7 years, and, how many of you teach middle school? So, wondering what your middle school kids might be gave them that other sense of light, dark, all that kind of stuff. But think about how we can take our kids who may not ever experience something like visiting China or get a sense for what the rest of the world is like. How great would it be to be able to bring that world right into their classroom? So Discovery Education Atlas is just one of the many resources that we already have built into Discovery Education Streaming, and it's a plug and play. I didn't have to download anything. lesson. I simply drilled down into China, moved into the culture, you see, although that feels kind of dark. We have four different thematic strands for all of the media content that is organized in Discovery Atlas: culture, government, history, and the natural world. This is one of our plug-and-play type options. So, my next question, also non-rhetorical, how might you use some of the media resources here just in Atlas? How might you drill down into a country? How might you use it as a lesson starter, as a way to provide scaffolding, as a way to inspire students, engage students? What might you do with something like this? By the way, this is a tool you can actually put into the hands of your students as well. So this is something students could actually access on a computer lab computer, library computer, rotation station in your classroom, something along those lines.
Well, I'm a music teacher. I didn't even know this was on Discovery, and I've been using them for 8 years. But I use Google Earth right now to show scenes from countries. Well, I know it's somebody else, but to show scenes from the countries where our songs come from. But this would be great to be able to do something like this with Atlas and maybe show a sample of life or something like that from the different countries. Because I think it helps kids understand the music a little bit better.
Don't apologize for mentioning it. I'm a big Google fan. In fact, one of the things I was going to show with Atlas was specifically how you can bring it into Google Earth. So it was like you read my mind. And I swear he's not fancy here. So if I did want to bring this into, say, a Google Earth tour, like a place mark, if I wanted to bring it into a PowerPoint, if I wanted to bring it into an inspiration mind map, or Kidspiration mind map, link out to it from an Active Inspire file, Smart Notebook file, how would I do that? Well, one of the things that's great about all of the media assets that we have available in Discovery Educational Streaming is that we have this little share tab. And when I open up that share tab, it's going to provide me with a unique URL address that will allow me to hyperlink it elsewhere. Now, I get asked this question all the time, so I'm going to preempt it. What if I use Twitter or Delicious or Digo? Can I share this link out on those services? The answer is yes. How do I do that without violating the licensing agreement I have with Discovery? Well, this URL is an authenticated link, which means that if someone clicks on it on your Twitter feed or from your Delicious bookmarks, they are going to be first asked to sign in. So this is something that can be published anywhere. Because if someone doesn't have a user account, they don't have the username and password to be able to see it. Those people who do have an active user account can see it without much of a problem. So how could I bring this into that Google Earth placemark? I simply am going to copy that link, jump down to Google Earth, drill down to wherever. I guess I should probably go to China, but we're fine.
You're
going to
miss up a marker.
When I add my place mark,
it's close.
Yes, sort of close. Keep going. If I add my place mark, I could, instead of just saying, China or something like that, I could use my place mark to ask my students a critical thinking question. So, what do people in China do every morning? Now I can place that link there. Now, I know this doesn't look like much, but this is actually a dynamic text field, which means when I add that place mark with that critical thinking question, my students can simply click on the link and it will open up Atlas for them. Or if you're doing a whole class instruction, I mean, this could be something you're just doing on your smart board, your Promethean board, your projector. But this is a different way of using Google Earth, not just locating places, but using it to ask those critical thinking questions and provide that geographic framework as well. I mean, even if you're teaching literature or something like that, and there are some geographic connections to the short story or the book you're reading in class, this is another tool that you can use to help bring all that in. Now, maybe Atlas isn't quite the tool you want to bring in. Maybe that doesn't make sense. Well, perhaps look for something else. Do any of you teach novels to students or short stories or anything like that? They're really great at identifying things like symbolism, right? Like that's really easy for them. So So one of the things that you can use, and if you've never had an opportunity to see this in action, GoogleLitTrips.org has a great database of Google Earth tours that have been designed specifically to accompany novels. And they do categorize everything, elementary, middle, high school, and in fact, even university level novels. So perhaps there's something that in the book you're reading in class, you know, there's something that you want your students to be able to identify, that's, you know, that symbolism, identify the theme, the characters, whatever it might be. All of our media assets have that share link. So we can easily use Google Earth, the share links in Discovery Education, and create this really fantastic Google Earth tour or lit trip for our students. Yes?
So what you're saying is, whether it's lit or anything else, if I have a video that I want my kids to see, we're thinking about using Google as our email server driver for school or fifth grade.
Oh, so right? Google Apps.
So yeah. we could then link that together, and they could then watch the streaming video at home.
Yeah, if that. As soon as your students have their username and password for Discovery, so once your students get uploaded, yeah, that's a link you can put out anywhere. In fact, the Google Earth tours, like the actual exportable file, those KML files, when all you have are things like hyperlinks and those placemarks, they're not very big files. You could even attach them to an email. So that's one, you know, it's a really good option for providing your students with sort of a different, more, you know, different and novel way. To put some information together or demonstrate some information. So instead of just, you know, the typical lists or PowerPoint slides, you could do something along those lines. And by the way, for those of you that do teach literature and have never searched the Discovery Streaming Library for the Great Books series, you've got dozens and dozens and dozens of books that are the typical books that are taught in most scopes and sequences across the country. Yes?
Will you share how students get their usernames?
The district has to upload the students, so that would be someone in your district who is the administrator for Discovery Education. They upload the students, and the students have a username and password much the same way that teachers would have a username and password.
And who did they contact to do that? Upload
the district, the district administrator? The district administrator.
No, can that person, where do they upload the names?
The district administrator will upload it through their MyAdmin. That's why it has to be one person who is the district administrator. But they will be able to upload they basically upload the students the same way the teachers are uploaded. It's a spreadsheet. And most districts will use that same username and password that students use when they authenticate through Active Directory, for instance, to log into computers in their buildings as well.
And a lot of districts have also done standardized on their login for students. It might be the state and then a unique username. And then the password is all the same for all students. It could be first initial, middle initial, last name type. Something to sort of standardize, and that way you know what you're looking for as students log in and all students log in.
But if you have questions about that, or if you are your district administrator, stick around after the session. I'll show you a quick tutorial online that you can download that takes you step by step. Not just how to do that, but also how to print out the user reports and things along those lines. I'm sorry.
It's free?
Oh, yeah, it's free. It's part of the subscription, yes. There's no additional cost to upload students. Any other questions about that? All right, so
all the states do
free in Arizona,
state does
have.
We have the subscription.
Yes. Yeah, Ideal does, and I guess I probably should have done that at the beginning. But when you go to the Ideal website and you log into Ideal, with that single sign-on that you have, that logs you into Discovery Education Streaming. So ASU and Ideal have partnered to bring this to teachers and now students in the state of Arizona. So Google Earth, nice different type of platform. Let's take a look at a different strategy. Someone else said that they start the day with a calendar. Well, let's take a look at what Discovery does with this calendar. So for those of you here for the last session, I know Justin talked a little bit about calendar. I'm going to tell you some of the ways that I use it as well. Okay? Now, the way the calendar is organized, just like the Atlas chunks information geographically and then thematically by country, calendar organizes it chronologically and by discipline. So for every single day, and it will default to the day of the year that you're on, you can scroll down and see all different things that have happened in history in different disciplines. And when you find something that matches up with what you're doing, you can open it up, put description, some video segments and other resources. It's a way for you to very quickly chunk and put stuff together. I will say, as a former social studies teacher, you have to imagine things like Veterans Day were very important. And about 4 years ago, I was, morning announcements are going on, still drinking my coffee, getting ready for, homeroom to wrap up, and I heard the kid on morning announcements talk about, that we were going to be having a quick moment of silence to, acknowledge Veterans Day. And of course, I'm like, I am the worst history teacher in the world. I planned nothing for Veterans Day. I forgot it was Veterans Day. Bless you. So what did I do? I jumped straight to the calendar. Of course, it was going to default on Veterans Day, November 11th. I jumped straight to the calendar, and on certain days of the year, we have little commemorative days. Okay? So I could jump to that commemorative day and look at the genius of all geniuses of teaching, because I have all of these great resources already put together, ready to use for Veterans Day. It worked out really nicely. This is also a nice way, I've seen a lot of elementary teachers who use calendar. They focus on different disciplines. They use calendar as a way to transition from, say, spelling into math, from math into science, as a natural break for the students. So they'll go back to calendar, talk about, on this day in history and science, here's what happens. Certainly, if you do a morning announcements type program, you're looking for this day in history, this is a great spot. Just to tell you the great idea from our friends Martha Ruggie in Harrisburg. She does a calendar.
No.
This is just such a wonderful idea. Our good friend Martha Ruggie teaches sixth grade in a Harrisburg school district. And she teaches a very low SES population. A lot of her students are transient. They're only there for parts of the year. She has a lot of students who are second language learners in her class. And she finds that they often, because of their language acquisition, wherever they are, the fact that kids are kind of always moving in and out of the class, that they are very uncomfortable sharing with their classmates. They don't like to talk in front of class. They don't like to stand up. So she wanted to come up with an idea that would foster class community, so let the kids share something of themselves, so they come to respect and enjoy each other's company, practice some technology skills to help level the playing field for those students who don't have computers at home, so they haven't practiced these things, and also get the students an opportunity to speak in front of their classmates in a very low-stress environment. So what she does is she signs into Discovery on the computer lab. She has the students go to calendar. They go to their birthday, and then they have to choose four things that happened on their birthday. And they have to take those four items. For each of those items, download a video segment, put a short little PowerPoint slide together. So those first four slides of their PowerPoint, the four things that happened in history on their birthday, are their way to tell their classmates, this is why my birthday is important to the whole world, not just my world. But what's even cooler is that she takes it a step further, and on the fifth slide, they have to illustrate and essentially share, here's what they hope to accomplish in their lives that will someday appear on calendar. So they get a chance to practice with PowerPoint, with downloading media, embedding media into PowerPoint. They get to stand up in front of the class, and it's a low-stress activity because they haven't really had to do an awful lot of research, per se, but they can put it together a really nice piece for their classmates, and then they get to share something of themselves as well. So it's a fantastic way to start the school year or something to do midway through the school year as prep work to get the students ready for some sort of a media project or things like that. So calendar works out really nicely. Now let me ask for, yes, question.
Can you sort calendar items by grade level or readability, or are they just all one format?
They're pretty much right now all one format. They pull content out according to, of course, those different disciplines. We don't track readability that way, but if there is a video clip that you go to, or it could be an encyclopedia article or some other resource, when you scroll down on that media asset page, it will tell you where that particular piece of media has been tagged. And usually, for the reading pieces, of course, they're tagged by readability and alignment to state standards. For the other types of media, like the video, is tagged by grade level according to state standards.
Are the great things about having access to all grade levels? Even if you're primary, you can show a higher grade video by turning the sound off. You can narrate it yourself so that you're speaking to your students and telling them what's happening at a more grade level appropriate language rather than maybe a high school level.
to filter down by many different areas. So this left-hand column here, narrow my search results. This gives me, this gives me the option of narrowing my search results by subject area. And if I drill into a subject area, it will continue to drill down. So if I drill into social studies, I'm going to see, you know, civics and history, etc. I can also narrow it down by grade level. Okay? So if I'm looking for content that's specific to elementary students, I can do that. If I continue to scroll down, I can narrow down by media asset type. And I can even see, for, especially for our videos, I can see whether or not the content is closed caption, whether it's listed as editable. So I can be very specific with how I apply those filters and find that content even more quickly. And if clicking on all those things does take a little bit too much time, one of the other search engines we have available to us is an advanced search. An advanced search essentially allows you to apply those types of filters before you even start your search. So I can narrow my content down by grade level or grade level ranges. I can narrow it down by discipline. And by the way, narrowing it down by discipline is actually a really good idea. There are certain concepts that mean one thing in, say, a science class, something different in, say, a social studies class, okay? Or different in a language arts class. Sometimes narrowing down by discipline is really helpful. Like, I think I used to search for diversity resources. And of course, when I did that, looking for content for social studies, what did I get? Tons of stuff on diversity of life tied to science standards. So narrowing it down by subject area is actually really powerful. You can also narrow down by copyright dates and things along those lines. If you do know a specific publisher, so you know, I've used that before, I know it's by Scholastic, I forget exactly what it's called, you could narrow it down by publisher. Yes, a lot of our content does come from Discovery Channel and Animal Planet and our other cable networks, but we work with over 180 other content publishers like PBS and Weston Woods and Scholastic to help license the content for the classroom use. Now, there are some other filters, and I mentioned editable and closed caption before. How many of you know that you can not just stream the content online, but you can also download it, right? Okay. One of the things Discovery works so far to do with our other content publishers is make sure that the content is not sitting in here just for teachers to use. We don't want this to be a really fancy-looking DVD player, okay? So we have lots of different media types beyond just video. And in addition to being able to stream that video online, we want teachers to be able to use it as a building block for instructional resources for their kids, but also we want kids to be able to use this content as building blocks for their own learning artifacts. So, for instance, the video content, you know, if I download the video, let's think about all the things we could do with a piece of downloaded video. Okay? I could embed it in a PowerPoint slide, right? By the way, do you want me to show you how to do that? Why don't we look for a video? And let's see. Let's find the video. Now I'm just going to filter by video segment because I don't want a whole video. Unless I'm going to be after from school that day, which I think is but if I'm teaching, I only want to show a video segment. And you know, I specifically want to look for something for my middle school kids. I want to filter by middle school. And of course, I teach social studies, so let me filter by social studies. And I actually want something that's also editable. By the way, do you see as I'm applying those filters, you see this growing list? This is called your breadcrumb. Okay? You know, like the story Hansel and Gretel, breadcrumbs in the woods, etc. Well, the breadcrumb is designed to help you see what filters you have applied to your search so that if you realize you're getting too deep into the search and this is not quite what you want, instead of having to start over, simply remove one or more of those filters. So with a couple of quick clicks, I went from hundreds of resources down to 44, which is certainly more manageable. So when I go into the media asset page for the video, of course, all of our video content, as you're probably aware since you're already using the service, we have chapter because we know that you really don't often have time, for instance, to show a full video, like in this case, this whole video would have been 18 minutes long. Okay? 18 minutes out of my 25-minute class, that's way too much. So I might filter down to just a specific 2-minute or 3-minute video segment. By the way, all of our content is tagged to state standards, and we tag the standards to the segment level of the video. So not the full video, but all the way down to the segment level of the video. So if you're looking for content that is specific to your state standards, whether it's for remediation leading up to assessments, whether you are just looking for a quick background by standard as a way to start out your unit, the content is tagged right to that segment level. So if I download this video clip, depending on which operating system you're running, on which platform, you might have to right-click on the download icon, or you could just click on the download icon. So I'll download it to my computer, actually, I should say first. I might choose to change my file download type. You might notice that I'm on a Mac today, so I really should be downloading as QuickTime, not Windows Media. How many of you are using Smart Notebook or Mimeo Notebook or Active Inspire? Okay. One of the download types that we have added is the ability to download as Flash. For those of you using those other interactive whiteboard applications, you know that in order to embed a video file into, say, Active Inspire or Smart Notebook, the video file has to be in Flash format. So if I literally want it on my Smart Notebook slide, it has to be Flash. Otherwise, if I bring it into PowerPoint or Inspiration Mind Map or something else like that, I'll choose QuickTime as my download type for a Mac and Windows Media as my download type for a PC. So I'll download it. And I want to show you a couple of quick tips and tricks with the downloaded media. This works with our images, this works with our video file, our audio files, our songs. One thing that I always want to make sure that I'm doing with my students is demonstrating best practices with regard to the ethical and responsible use of others' intellectual property. Luckily, all of the content that's in Discovery Education's media library has the citation information built right in, an MLA, APA, and the Chicago style. But here's one little thing that I used to do. I would, with these video files, especially these editable video files, and with the images and the audio files and the songs, I would often create resource folders on our district server so that when my students went into the computer lab and were sitting down with iMovie and they were going to be creating their own digital documentaries, I didn't want to have them spend the 45 minutes that I got in the computer lab every 2 weeks. I didn't want them to have to spend it all just searching for media. I wanted them to actually use that time to construct something. So I would download all that content. But here's a problem. When I did that, they never saw this page. So how did I give them the citation information? Here's what I did. I copied that citation information. I just highlighted it, and I copied it. Now I'm going to go back to my downloaded media file. And this works on a Mac or a PC, by the way. On a Mac, I would right-click, or depending on your operating system, you might have to control-click. I would right-click and go to Get Info. On a PC, I would right-click and go to Properties. When I do that, I can enter into the metadata for this media file, which means this is the data that will travel with that file, whether I put it onto a flash drive, onto a server folder, put it onto a CDR or DVD-R, something like that. It'll travel with it. So on my Mac, I'm going to paste that citation information into Spotlight Commons. On your PC, when you go to Properties, depending on whether or not you're running Vista or XP, you're either going to go to Description or Summary, but it's the same basic thing, just paste that citation information. That way, if I move this media file somewhere else, anywhere else I move it, if I right-click on it and go to the Get Info or go to Properties, the citation is there. It travels with the file. So if the students are using that folder of raw materials and they're going to be building out a photo story or an iMovie video or a Movie Maker video or something like that, all they have to do is right-click to get the citation information. It's automatically built right into the metadata. Think that's useful?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Excellent. And I will say that one of the great uses of the editable video files is that not only can I bring that into a PowerPoint, not only can I bring it into a movie, but our editable videos can be changed from their original format. So if I have the ability to do green screening on iMovie 09 or Adobe Premiere, or if I'm going to get really high-tech and try the blue screen transition in Windows Movie Maker, I can actually put my kids right into that video. They can take that 3-minute video clip, splice it down, and just use 30 seconds of it. They can change it by adding text overlays or special effects. They can speed it up or slow it down, do whatever they want. The editable video files are designed for your students to mash up and be creative with. The non-editable video files can still be downloaded and used in those ways. They just have to be used in their entirety. Okay? So that's where the editable video files come in. So I've got this downloaded media clip, of course. Now, if I wanted to bring it into a PowerPoint slide, okay, there's actually a couple of ways I can do this. Now, I could hyperlink to it, okay, just like hyperlinking on the internet. But let me tell you what I believe about hyperlinking and your average student. From the time it takes for you to click on the link on the PowerPoint slide, when you hyperlink, it needs to go to another application to open it up. So on my Mac, it will have to open up QuickTime. It will find that video. It'll play that video. That could take 30 seconds. Let me tell you what my ninth graders could do in 30 seconds. So I personally always like to embed media files right on the PowerPoint slide. Now, I could do that by, I'm on a Mac, but I'm on Microsoft Office on a Mac. If you're using Keynote, it's basically the same thing on a Mac, or if you're using PowerPoint on a PC, basically the same thing. You could go up to Insert, okay? So I could insert a movie. I also have a shortcut tab here to insert a movie. If you're using Office 07 on a PC, you have that whole portion of the ribbon that will let you insert media. I'm going to go ahead and insert the movie, which I put onto my desktop. Now, this is a very important little thing. You're going to see this on a PC as well. As soon as you import it, it's going to say, do you want it to play when you click it or automatically? I always, maybe it's on the control screen, I want to be able to click it and play. If I were to say automatically, as soon as I advance to the slide, that media clip would start playing. Okay? So I like to be able to click it and change it. Now here's an advantage of having it on your PowerPoint slide. First of all, you can resize it and choose however big you want it to be. Okay? You can even choose to have it displayed full screen when you click on it if you want. I usually, though, like to make use of the real estate on that slide. See, I used to use Discovery Education media resources all the time when I was teaching. And I was always afraid that at some dinner table somewhere in Middletown, Pennsylvania, some mom or dad would ask their kid, what did you do in school today? That kid would say, Ms. Stormer showed another video. I was always afraid that would happen. So I wanted to be very deliberate about why I was using this media clip. Okay? So I'd like to be able to use that slide real estate to put an essential question, and in, you know, enduring understanding, a vocabulary term, as something to focus the students in as to why they're watching this video clip or why they're listening to that audio file. Okay? It gave me the power to do that. And of course, in presentation mode, it also gives me the power to control when I want that to show, and it's instantaneous. I don't have to wait for QuickTime to open. It plays right away. So it's a big advantage to be able to have that control. But there's a very important thing you need to know about this. Okay? It looks like the video is in PowerPoint, right? It's not in PowerPoint. What happens if I take this PowerPoint off of this computer, put it on a flash drive, and give it to you? The video won't play because this is really just a very fancy hyperlink. Okay? So in order for this video to play, if I want to move this PowerPoint somewhere else, what I usually advise teachers to do, and the same thing with students, if they're using media in their own PowerPoint, create a folder. Put the PowerPoint in the folder. Put the video file in the folder. If you need to move that PowerPoint somewhere, take the whole folder with you. And I usually suggest to my students that they actually create the folder first. Okay? So create the folder. Put the PowerPoint there. Start the PowerPoint. Put the PowerPoint in there. Download everything to that folder. Have that folder be the house for all of the different media resources you will have available to you in that PowerPoint. So embedding the content that way is a huge, huge help. Well, let me ask, if you are embedding media like this into PowerPoint, how might you use that in a lesson? Bless you.
use video.
Like, how about you use a video or an audio file? A song, a sound effect, a piece of clip art, an image. How might you use this stuff? Okay, so provide the scaffolding, the basis of understanding. Give students a little bit of background knowledge, they can frame out the new learning. Excellent.
A writing prompt.
You could use it for a writing prompt. Now, why might media be something you want to use for a writing prompt?
They're used to watching things, so I like to use it that way.
Definitely. I mean, our kids, I mean, have you seen some of the new studies that the Pew Internet Research Foundation just released some new data in January? And the old data, say, like, you know, the earlier studies in 2006, that kids were spending about 8.5 hours a day exposed to media. The newer research says they're spending about 10.5 hours a day, and if you take into account the times that they're multitasking, you know, texting while they're listening to their iPod or something like that, it's over 11 hours a day the average kid, 7 days a week, is spending exposed to media. Okay? That's like a full-time job with lots of good overtime. Okay. They're developing literally an expertise with regard to media consumption. So that media clip is something that will help to engage them and get them thinking. I don't mean this replaces other types of media. We still want them reading, we still want them writing, want them doing all those types of things. But this is a way to get them started. Okay. So I could use that for a writing prompt. Now, I will say with writing prompts, someone else said they start their day with journal rights as well. I will say that one of the things that used to always frustrate me about my middle and high school students with regard to writing pieces was the fact that, first of all, it was not always eco-friendly, right? They'd all write on a piece of paper and hand all those papers up. And if they have H1N1, you know, they're handing their germs to you. But I often had the problem of handwriting. Okay? Isn't it sometimes an adventure to decipher your students' handwriting? And what happens when the handwriting is really bad? You spend more time trying to figure out what the words say. Like, you're basically down, not so much reading, you're down to the decoding level. Which means that you're having a hard time actually getting to the message of what your students are trying to say. So we have a solution. And it's very sanitary and eco-friendly. Mm-hmm. It is in our My Builders tools, and it is called Writing Prompt Builder. Writing Prompt Builder. And we have hundreds of writing prompts already built, so you can search our existing ones. But if you want to create your own brand new writing prompt, it takes you through 5 steps. You can't get lost along the way. The instructions are pretty much right there on the page. You give the writing prompt a title. You select what sort of a prompt is going to be. So is it going to be analytical, descriptive, expository, narrative, persuasive? You choose where to save it, and it is going to save into your My Content folder up here. You choose where you want it saved in your My Content folder. You choose a subject area. You choose a grade level. And you move to the most exciting step, where you get a chance to now select from our vast media library of over 100,000 different media pieces, you select what media pieces you would like to use as the basis for your prompt. You can select up to 3. Sometimes people ask, well, I would like to put more in there. Remember, the idea of putting the media in to the start of writing prompts is just to provide your students with that initial framework, okay, and then let their minds go from there. So I can search for different media pieces right from in here. So why don't I, again, look for a video segment on Arizona. Now I can click on it if I want to preview it, or if I look at it and say, that looks about what I want. Okay, it's 1 minute long, perfect, not going to take up too much time, kids can start writing immediately. I click add to my writing prompt, select add, and I now have a video clip here. I can add up to 3 different types of media. So I could have a video clip and an image and an article. Or maybe I would have, for my elementary students, maybe a song and an image. Or maybe I want 3 images. Maybe I want just 1 video clip. It's all up to me. I click continue. And here, even though it says writing prompts caption, and you think this is just going to be underneath your picture or whatever, this is actually what you want your students to write about. So it's directions. Okay? And you can see that you have here not just a blank text space, You have a pretty substantial editing toolbar there. We refer to this as a WYSIWYG toolbar. Does anyone know what WYSIWYG stands for?
What you see is what you get.
What you get, exactly. So you can use a lot of these formatting tools to make your prompts really specific. One of the things I used to love about writing prompts is that it had a table tool. Okay? Like every single one of my rubrics ever was in a table. And if I wanted to put my rubric into this and it didn't have a table format, it was a pain in the neck. Copy paste everything in there. Lost all formatting. But I could actually put my rubric in here as a table, tell my students what I want them to write about. Write about why Arizona is so cool. I mean, that facetiously, this is not difficult here. Like, and I have lots of different tools here. Now, how many of you are ever in that position where you don't just make one assessment or assignment, you actually make like 15, because you make your base one, and then your kids with IEPs require different, you know, different specially designed instruction, whether that's, define things, etc. One of the things that's great about all of our builders, our writing prompt builder, our quiz builder, and our assignment builder, is that it gives us the opportunity to create one base model, and then I can go back in and make edits and create copies very quickly. So maybe, in a differentiated version, since I'm being slightly funny here, I might highlight the word cool and tell some of my students what I mean by this. Or it could be something more like, I'm writing in the instructions saying, compare and contrast, and I might need to remind some of my students, comparing means to find things that are similar, contrasting means to find things that are different. When I go to save and continue, I can look at basically a sample of what my students will see as their prompt. I can even print it out, so if I do need students who need to have it on paper, they can do that. Of course, if it is a video or something interactive, or something to be seen on the computer. But if it's just an image, for instance, you could just print it out. When I move to the final phase, which is the assigned phase, there are two ways I can put this in the hands of my students. If your students have already been uploaded into the service, so they have their own usernames and passwords, I can assign it to an entire class of students, or I could assign it to just individual students within that class. So that's if the students have existing usernames and passwords. So if your district has already uploaded students, you would do it this way. If your district has not uploaded students yet, you have a second option that says assign by code or URL. That would provide a unique URL address and a code, or if you have a way of, say, hyperlinking this and giving it to students, this is kind of long, this one, but if you have a way of hyperlinking and giving that to students, you could also just give them that direct link. Now, when they go to this page, they are not logging in, they are simply putting their names down as if they were putting their names on top of a piece of paper. Okay, so there, no account is needed. They can get this from home, from school. They can, you know, take this if you choose, allow them to take it multiple times. Okay, but then instead of having to bring home folders worth of German, hard to decipher, hieroglyphic handwriting, writing prompts, all you have to do is go to your My Classrooms. And obviously you need a laptop or a desktop computer. If you've assigned it to your students that first way with existing accounts, you can look at the assignments here. If you've assigned it to your students with that unique URL address, you would look at it under assigned by code or URL. So you can take a look at that content, you can read it right online, you can score it. And the beauty of the builders is that once you've created it once, you can just make copies for second semester, next year. If your district has turned on district-wide sharing, one person, like say one fourth grade teacher, can create the writing prompt, share it out, and every fourth grade teacher can use it. Okay? So it's very easy to make this customizable. You can share it across your district or your school, and it's something that allows the students that extra time on the computer using that digital interface. And I often had students whose IEPs actually said they haven't typed things anyway. Mm-hmm. So this would have been an option. Mm-hmm. I thought about this when I would see that in the the SDI section of the IEP contract. I would often be concerned if I just sent my kids to Microsoft Word think a spell check or grammar check, and I would like lose whole components of, you know, data about their writing, because Word would automatically spell check and grammar check it for them. With writing prompt, your students don't have that. So if you are trying to assess grammar, if you are trying to assess spelling and things like that, writing prompt is a much better option than simply opening up a Word document and watching them to make sure they don't spell check. Now, we do have a couple of other different types of builder tools. I use Writing Prompt Builder very, very often. And one of the things I used to do, because I used to start my day with current events as well, I would actually create a writing prompt that simply provided a hyperlink out to the Philadelphia Inquirer local section. So I never had to change the writing prompt. Kids would click on that hyperlink, and they would respond to a current event right here in the writing prompt. I never had to collect paper. It was just a beautiful thing. But I often like to put together web quests for my students. Any of you ever create a web quest before? It takes a long time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. I remember making my first web quest on Claire's homepage. making the whole website and stuff like that. Okay. Well, we have a much easier solution for creating web quests. It's called Assignment Builder. And Assignment Builder will let you bring in content from Discovery Education. So you can bring in videos and other media pieces from Discovery Education. You can also bring in outside web links. So with one assignment builder, you basically can create a multimedia web quest with activities, and I can even, if I'm going to create an assignment, I can even add, writing prompts or quizzes that I've created. Okay? So one of the things with web quests often was I would have lots of different activities for my students to complete, but I had to find a way to just bring it all together, have my students produce something, an artifact, that gave me data about how much they actually got from that particular activity. So with something like Assignment Builder, I could actually bring in writing prompts or quizzes that I've already created. I can bring in all different types of media from Discovery Education. I can even bring in web links and include instructions as to what I want my students to do on those web links. So if you have a limited amount of time to give your students one-on-one time with the laptop or the desktop in the computer lab, you want your students to be, you know, as productive as possible. So putting together an assignment for them and having all the materials set and ready to go is a great alternative to simply sending them out to the computer lab with a paper web quest where they have to type in the URL addresses. Certainly saves you a lot of time for having to create even, you know, like a wiki page or another website for your web quest. And once you have it created, you can automatically make those copies and make modifications for those students who have specially designed instructional needs as well. So it's a much, much faster resource. Now, my little tip for you in creating these though, because there's just so much media out there, what I used to like to do is before I was going to create an assignment, I would have things already bookmarked into my content in Discovery, because one of the things that I can do when I filter, I can just look at things I've bookmarked into my content. So instead of having to search for Arizona and look at all of the stuff for Arizona, I could just filter for those things I've already found about Arizona and bookmarked into my content. So it's actually much faster. You have yourself bookmarked, and you have in your mind what you want your students to do, you can actually create a web quest for your students in under 5 minutes with assignment, which is a huge improvement from the way you used to have to create web quests by actually making a web page or a Word document, hyperlinking, and all that kind of stuff. Now, where do all of these builders go to live? Well, once you've created them, they live in your My Content folder. And you can organize your My Content, by the way. I mean, I'm one of those people who, right now, this is a lot of icons on my desktop. I do not let icons and stuff on my desktop. I let everything get organized in the folders and the subfolders. So one of the things that you can do with My Content is you can create your major folder, your umbrella folders, and create subfolders within to house all of your content, including assignments and different activities that you may have created. And then if I wanted to go back quickly and just see something that I'd already created and I wanted to make, say, a copy of it under my action menu, I have the option of making a quick copy. I can go back in, make those very fast edits. And then I've got my differentiated version for, you know, little Johnny or Sarah who requires this type of specially designed instruction. Okay. So it's very simple. Now, when it comes to things like quizzes, whenever I had to make a quiz, anything that had multiple choice questions, I always had to make separate copies, one where I highlighted the action verb, one where I eliminated one distractor. I mean, I would have 7 or 8 of these different things floating around. And when I passed them out to my students, inevitably, what did my middle and high school students say? How come she has that one? Why don't I have one that has this? Okay? And it was kind of tough to explain to a teenager that fair doesn't always mean equal, right? But if I did this in Quiz Builder instead, in my Builder tools, I can create differentiated versions, send my kids to the computer lab, tell everyone, you know, sign in, you're going to be taking a quiz on Manifest Destiny. They don't know that they're getting a different version than anyone else because they're all working on it themselves. Now, without the time, I'm realizing I'm running up short of the end of my time here. Really running up short. Okay. One of the things that we want to make sure when we are differentiating, that when we are being fair to our students based on their needs, their readiness, with Quiz Builder, I can very quickly create a base model quiz with multiple choice, multiple select, true and false, short answer, and essay questions. When I go in and make a copy, I can, bless you, very quickly eliminate one distractor from every question. I can even demonstrate to my students that assessments are learning tools as well, because I can add instant remediation to these quizzes. So if I want to, I can add a remediation video so that if the student answers the question incorrectly, they're immediately prompted to watch the video for reteaching. I can add correct and incorrect notes. And people often ask, like, well, what does that correct note say? Congratulations, you got it correct. You could use those correct and incorrect notes to provide reinforcement for why that answer is correct. So if they answer the question correctly, you say, congratulations, you answered, you know, you selected the correct answer. Water cycle was the correct answer because, right? Because, you know, kids can guess and sometimes get things right. Then you can add the incorrect note. You didn't answer the question correctly. I suggest you go back and review your lab report from this lab. Okay? So you can add those pieces of remediation, those different levels of support, build it right into your quizzes. That quiz could be a formal assessment. That quiz could just be a formative assessment that you're using to just do a quick touch base to see whether or not your students have acquired the skills and content ready to move on. So how many of you have never seen the builders before? Like, this is the first time you even realized we had builders there. How many of you are going to try a builder sometime?
Yeah.
Absolutely. It is such a time saver, folks. It's such a huge time saver. All right. So I realize that we are wrapping up, and I can see that they really want to come and change out this bulb. So here's what I would like to do. First of all, I'd like to invite any of you to stick behind, and if you have any questions, come on up and ask me questions. You can also post questions and comments to the den wall.
Rosie is going to clean out
the little